In 2012, Tyree Barnett and his wife decided to leave their North Carolina home in Barack Obama's America to come and live in Australia. African Americans are about 14% of the US population. In Australia, Americans are less than 0.5% of the population, and African Americans presumably a smaller percentage of that than that. But that shift meant that Tyree has a very distinctive perspective, both on Australia as an African American living here, but also on his country of origin, which has, well, changed a lot since Tyree came down under. Tyree's written about his experiences and insights in the new memoir, Stolen Man on Stolen Land. He's also going to be discussing it at the State Library of New South Wales as part of the Sydney Writers Festival on the 12th of February, but he's here to discuss it now with us on Sunday Extra. Welcome, Tyree.
Thank you, Julian. Thanks for having me.
So why did you and your wife decide to move to Australia?
Yeah, so back in 2012, as you stated, we were looking to move abroad. Our families were in good health. We were doing pretty well in the States, and we just wanted to get some experience for our resumes, do some traveling. And so we looked at my wife's industry of clinical research traveled a lot better than mine did. And at the time, it was television news, and after that, university admissions. So very much a Bachelor of Arts major on my side. So so we ended up settling on Sydney after looking at cities like Melbourne, Singapore, some other cities in Southeast Asia, as we were looking to get a bit of cultural experience, but still something that wasn't, I guess, a huge culture shock for us coming out of the US. And so that's how we ended up in Sydney.
Tell us a bit more about the family background of you and your wife in North Carolina, Tyree. And I'm also interested to know how your family and indeed your community reacted to your decision to move down to Australia, because it sounds like there's some not especially positive images of Australia that you encountered.
Sure. Yeah. So my side, my family, got one younger sister, 5.5 years younger. Two parents, both turned 70 last month. Grew up in Raleigh, North Carolina, which is the state capital of the state. My wife is from the Crystal Coast, a very actually scenic, they call it God's Country, area of the state. So along the coast, kind of right in the middle. She also has one younger sibling, and so she's the oldest, two parents. And the unique thing about her family is that they all actually grew up, and I cover it in the book, area called North River, which is an historically black section of a wider called Beaufort. Beaufort's a very scenic and tourist attraction in the eastern North Carolina part of the state. And so she grew up around family, cousins, friends, unlocked doors, every backyard is her backyard, that sort of upbringing as well. And then to your second question around, I guess the impressions and how people reacted. People were quite surprised. I remember telling my grandfather at the time I was moving to Australia, and he just sort of looked at me on the couch and said, "You're going where?" it's essentially, I'd only known one person that had ever gone to Australia, like that I had met, actually two people. One was a former coworker, and the other was ironically my barber, who I mentioned in the first chapter. Mm-hmm. His daughter had a Make-A-Wish trip out to Australia as well. So that's kind of our background. Yes.
You obviously had a major, in some ways a big culture shift, but in other ways, as you say, there was a certain familiarity there. I wanted to ask you about some comparisons that you elaborate on in the book. Could you tell us a little bit about encounters you've had with police in America and Australia and how they compare?
Sure. So in the book, I talk about, do a flashback about how I was 16 or 17, and I was driving my parents' luxury SUV from probably the grocery store back home. It wasn't a very long trip. I do cover in the book how my upbringing was pretty privileged, and so the privilege kind of carried over into moving here. But how I was playing loud music, as teenagers do, I had back in those days a CD. In the radio, and a cop pulls me over for no real reason. I wasn't speeding, I wasn't disobeying any traffic law. he just kind of has a talk, you know, where are you going? Is this your car? Where are you coming from? And that experience scared me so much, because when you're Black in America and you encounter police, it is not always a safe space. Definitely isn't a safe space. And at any moment, anything you do may tip the officer to react a certain way. So you have to be very mindful of your movements and your verbiage and how you conduct yourself. So that was my experience in the U.S. When I got to Australia, there's one particular chapter in the book where I talk about being at a house party in Surrey Hills. And again, music playing loudly, and the cops come by and knock on the door. And there are elements in the air. There definitely is, narcotics. And so I automatically think, wow, we're here on work visas. This could go bad really quickly. We could be deported. All the cop says is, hey, do you mind closing the door, turning the music down, and then they go on about their way. Very different from what would have happened in the U.S., especially given the amount of people of color in the room. So yes, here police are, at least my own experience, I know not every other cultural background has the same experience. My own experience has been, they've been a lot less prone to immediate aggression and a lot less prone to wanting to find a reason to arrest you versus just having a talk, kind of setting your course right and going about their way, basically.
We're speaking with Tyree Barnett, author of the memoir Stolen Man on Stolen Land on ABC Radio National. Tyree, could you speak a little bit about forging relations and a sense of community and Black community in your new family setup in Australia?
Sure. So we were lucky in that in the modern day, age, there are things like Facebook and social media. And so we were able to connect with African-Americans or people from the greater Black diaspora that lived in Australia already through Facebook groups. And so we got to know, upon landing here, we got to know a few people that we, I think the same week, ended up having dinner with. And so we got to form kind of early friendships, early community that way. We're all around the same age and sort of around the same point in life, where some were single, some were married, some were here for a short amount of time, some ended up staying longer. And so from there, we're able to use that first initial group of people and branch out and meet others. There is, like you said in your opening, a very, very small community of African Americans here, and not just in Sydney, but all over Australia. But thanks to things like social media, as well as social media leading to things like Thanksgiving dinners or other sort of cultural significant get-togethers. There was a big one when the first Black Panther movie came out. A lot of us went to see it in the city. And so this also helped foster a bit of community. The hard part is that Sydney is often transient, and so people don't always stay. Sometimes they go back to the U.S., they move elsewhere. And so I talk about in the book how it is difficult at times to keep that sense of community when people are kind of coming and going, in and out of Australia.
You also use an interesting phrase, which is a Black hierarchy in Australia. Could you explain what you mean by that?
Sure. So a Black hierarchy is definitely nothing that I created, not my original thought. But it basically is how whiteness, as in the mindset that some white people seem to have that is tied to their cultural identity, it's how others see Black people in Australia in particular. It's not how we see ourselves. And so being Black American, because our Black American culture is so popular globally, and because oftentimes our Black American culture will precede us, as in come before us, to different countries and lands, even before the people there ever see a Black American person, there is a lot more curiosity, a lot more familiarity, a lot more attraction, and even bordering into fetishization. Or having an experience with a Black American because of the culture, because of the ongoing civil rights struggles, and because America is so still a global power and still well-known throughout the world. When we export our culture, which has a heavy amount of Black American influence in it, that creates more of the familiarity and the hierarchy. That's when that comes in of, okay, this person is a special Black. They are not just, you know, when you open your mouth, oh, they're African American or Black American. So this is a very unique experience. Someone I've seen on TV or that I hear on the radio, or my favorite, you know, rap artist, et cetera, whatever, or athlete. And so that's where that real curiosity and hierarchy comes in of, I'm placing you and your identity above anyone else I've perceived as being Black because I'm more familiar with you. Say toward that.
You've had kids in Australia as well, and it was interesting that you wrote that you felt safer having a Black child in Australia. I wonder if you could give us some reflections on how you imagine your kids' identities evolving as African-American Australians.
Sure. So, yeah, I do talk about in the book needing to ensure that I give them a sense of self, of what it means abroad versus what someone else is interpreting or telling them that being Black.
Look, unfortunately, it seems like we're having a few problems with the line there, Tyree. So, yeah, I'm not sure what it is, but we're also running a little bit short of time. Can you hear us?
Oh, yeah, I can hear you just fine. Sorry, can you hear me?
Yeah. Do go ahead. Sorry, we had a couple of dropouts there.
Okay, sorry. Okay, I'll try to stay in one place. So I was just saying that we did an ancestry DNA test to be able to tell the kids exactly what turned out to be West Africa, where we were from. We also showed them things like musical artists from back in the we bought them books. Black heroes, as well as books on indigenous culture and indigenous just way of life, indigenous perspectives, and also that they have that understanding too. And so we are continuously trying to bring in, you know, new elements, new bits of education. We've taken them home back to the U.S. a couple of times now. And as they get older, of course, they'll retain more of it and be able to do more sophisticated activities. But we definitely try to center as much as we can in literature, in television or in media, and just talking with them about their own cultural background so they have more certainty and more knowledge around that.
Yeah, well, and as you write in the book, you and your kids are now part of the evolving face of Black Australia. It's a fascinating account. Tyree, thank you so much for joining us on Sunday Extra.
Thank you, Julian. Thanks for your time.
That's Tyree Barnett, author of Stolen Man on Stolen Land, and he's also speaking as part of the Sydney Writers' Festival at the State Library of New South Wales on Thursday, the 12th of February.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.